Open our eyes, Lord, that we might see. Open our ears that we might hear. Open our mind and our heart that we might understand, so that we will turn to you and live.
Well, today's going to be, and perhaps even the next few weeks, a little bit different. One of the reasons why I moved away from the story of Lazarus, raising, although to be honest with you, was a wrestle Holy Spirit and I were having this morning, because it's one of my favorite readings in all the Gospels, and it's one of the reasons why I'm thankful we do the lectionary in that three-year cycle. It actually comes up sometimes multiple times every single year. It's a story I love dearly. But one of the things I'm always weary of is trying to hold in tension the stories that we've received and standing up here and teaching those and inviting us to think through them, and also being able to name the reality of where we are as a congregation. It feels odd to me to either just fully ignore the stories and only talk about us, or to completely ignore us and talk about only the stories. And I think there is a middle way in which we try to inhabit and we try to embody that I deeply value and deeply long for us to continue down. And so we are just coming up, as many of you know, on a significant moment of transition for our community and our congregation, moving from Venable to what will be our new church home at 830 Monticello. And even as Brendan and I have begun to talk and we're praying this week about what does it look like to guide us faithfully through this, recognizing that there are some of us who are incredibly excited and we're like, yes, like I can just count the days till I'm not here anymore. And then there are many of us who also this space has become deeply sacred. And the other spaces that our congregation has inhabited over nearly 15 years are deeply sacred to us. And so wanting to find a faithful and healthy balance between not just rushing out without giving space to name the good things that God has done, and also to not linger to not miss out on a way that it's transactional, but to turn our attention away from what it is that God longs to do. And so again, there were some ways in which I could see that coming into the story in John 11. But I just didn't want to force that. I didn't want to force that in. And so here we are in Matthew 11. And I'll get to why I chose that in a moment. And there's two things in this move that we are holding in tension. One is there is an urgency to this move. One of the big factors into making this move was a care for people, a stewardship of resources. So much of what happens on a Sunday is done by a faithful small group of people who have done it for a long time. And so recognizing that there's just a toll that setting up and breaking down every single Sunday takes. There's ways in which our community longs to express who God's created us to be as a church that we haven't been able to because we've been limited by this space. But then there's also, you know, that's one part. There's an urgency to this move. But the other tension we're sort of holding is there's an ongoing discernment that's required for pace. The way I was taught in seminary to open up a new space is you rush and you hurry, you burn the candle at both ends, and you do a big grand opening. I don't want to do that. I remember sitting in the class going, that sounds awful and weird. And I don't know that any of you want to do that too. It doesn't feel like us as a church. I'm thankful for that. And that leads me to really, that there's one thing I want to say to us today. I just have and continue to have a deep conviction that we cannot rush and hurry through this moment and through this transition. And I want to give you a few reasons this morning. The first is that because many of us, maybe all, but I'm learning more and more to not make broad generalizations, because many of us, maybe all, are just bone tired. We are just weary, running on fumes. The last 4 to 5 years, even longer, have just taken a real toll on some of us. And I know some of you are tired of hearing me say that, but I sense it in my body. I sense it in my grief. I sense it in my joys. I sense it in our conversations. I sense it in our rhythms. As individuals, as families, as churches. In fact, even as I was listening again to the Ezekiel reading, I found myself wondering, and I wrote the question down this morning, what do you find yourself relating more to in that story? Are you just the bones in a field? Are you bones that are beginning to rattle together? Are you a body standing, but it just doesn't feel like the breath is in you? And maybe you are someone who is a body and the breath of life is just raging through. The ancient question God asked everyone is, where are you? Can you name where you are? But also on behalf of those, there are those within our congregation who are exhausted, running on fumes at the end of their rope. And there are some who are not. But naming our own weariness and the burdens in ourselves and in those around us is part of what it means to keep company with Jesus. Keeping company with Jesus is recognizing, as one of my favorite authors puts it, that God's address is at the end of our ropes. Which means that when we bump up against people who are at the end of theirs, it's easy for me to flatten you into a person with more needs than I can do anything for. But I think what I'm beginning to learn more and more is that to name my own emptiness and bottom of the ropeness and to be with you and yours is one of the primary ways and places in which I meet God, in which God can be found. So where are you? Wherever we are, Jesus says to us this morning, come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Done, right? Does that fix everything? Raise your hand if that fixes it. I got one, and she's mine, so yeah, you're in. No. How many times is it presented that way? Well, just go to Jesus, sister, brother. All you need is Jesus. Even Jesus is like, yeah, keep reading. Jesus goes, keep reading. It's great Hallmark theology. Come, go to Jesus. You weary burden, go to Jesus. A mentor of mine says that in his books, he constantly writes the three letters YBH. Maybe I've said this before. You know what it stands for? Have I said this? Yes, but how? If you stop at come to me all who are weary and burdened and I will give you rest, it's yeah, okay, sure, great, sounds great. How? Jesus would say, keep reading. Take my yoke upon you. Learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. I love how Eugene translates it. Come to me, get away with me, you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Okay, Jesus, we're tired and we're weary. How do we find rest? And Jesus goes, take my yoke. I don't know if you've ever seen a yoke. It's big and it's heavy. Jesus is the king of irony, of turns of phrase. Jesus takes something we think of as heavy and burdensome and goes, it's easy and it's light. There's something about who Jesus is, about what Jesus believes about the world, about you, about God. We call it the way of Jesus. There's something about becoming like Jesus that leads deeper into rest. A deep conviction we cannot rush and hurry through this moment, in part because I don't think Jesus would. And that brings us to the next thing I want to say. Not only do we need to not rush and hurry because we're tired, but because this transition is about more than a building. Y'all, a building is a dime a dozen. I've been with three other churches walking through major building transitions. A building is a dime a dozen. A fire will prove my point. I'm not saying go set one. We're not going to, you know, but it's fleeting. Building is a dime a dozen. That isn't to say we're not excited and it isn't going to be good, but it is a dime a dozen. Which I think then there's an invitation to look a little bit deeper into what's going on, that this transition, this move into a building is part of our formation into the likeness of Christ. Not just individually, because I'm really convinced we all have an overinflated, just the church nationally has an overinflated sense of individual spirituality, myself included. We primarily think about relationship with God one-on-one. This building isn't just about moving into a place where we don't have to set up or break down, but it is my conviction that it's a space for us to move deeper into holiness as a congregation. And here's what I mean by that, because if I'm honest and can confess this to you as your pastor, I have really hated that word for a long time, holiness. It had been wielded in spaces I was in a way that I think was unhelpful, toxic, if not at times abusive. And so the idea of the holiness of God being, as one friend put it Friday at breakfast, like God's holding you over the fire like a crispy critter. And that's sort of the image many of us have for the holiness. The problem with that image is that the human face of God's holiness, which is Jesus, looks nothing like that. And so I've wondered how might Jesus help us reimagine holiness. And when we think about the life of Jesus and what it might mean for us for this move to be a space for us to move deeper into holiness as a congregation, there's a few things that strike me about Jesus as you keep company with him in the Gospels. First, there is no duplicity in Jesus. Jesus is the same inside and out. There's no duplicity. There's no guesswork you have to do with Jesus. If Jesus is exhausted, he looks exhausted. And Jesus is rested, he looked rested. There's no duplicity. What Jesus said flowed out of who he was, flowed into his life and to those around him. Part of the easy yoke is a movement from duplicity into genuineness. Not everything's hunky-dory. No, that's duplicity of its own. Not idealism. I have a friend this past week who she just said in an offhanded statement. I was like, slow down. Idealism is its own form of harshness. Idealism is its own force of harshness. There's no duplicity in Jesus, but also Jesus, when he's responding to people, responds with attentiveness, with attention, and with acceptance. Jesus is living, breathing compassion. He's living, breathing compassion. This part of the easy yoke is a movement from sin, life that is curved in on itself. There's a bentness toward ourselves into a holy life open to others. But the third and final thing that strikes me about Jesus is he was totally surrendered to his mother and father. Jesus was completely, utterly surrendered to his mother and father. There was nothing Jesus said or did that was not given to him to say and to do. The easy yoke here is the move from self-centeredness to a deep yieldedness to God, to a letness. God doesn't kick down the door, friends. So with that, what does it mean to move into a deeper, into holiness as a congregation? I do. Our hope and what I think, my intuition is that this space is going to be for us to move deeper into becoming ourselves. Individually and as a church. Rowan Williams says, Jesus brings out our distinctiveness. Becoming holy is about becoming ourselves. But it's also about becoming more genuinely loving, and it's a self-giving love. And I think this space is going to allow for us to do that. And this space is also going to move us deeper into becoming surrendered to God. Space for us to return in some fresh and creative ways to who we have always been, a people in the way of Jesus who are learning more and more and little by little to become the kind of people who receive and give away God's hospitality, God's restoration, and God's shalom. Brendan is going to do this in more detail during our prayers of the people, and we're going to do it, hopefully, we're hoping, in more detail in the coming weeks. But even if you look at where All Souls has begun to where we are today, along the way, God has been, the Quakers have this understanding and this belief that sort of life becomes clearer behind you as you look back. That's part of understanding who you are and who you've been made to be is by beginning to look back so that you can begin to look forward. And when you begin to mark the formation that's happened to us as a congregation in each of our spaces, many of these I was not there for it, which is why we're hoping to have people who were speak to this. But as I've heard these stories, and again, Brendan even has pictures, we begin in City Space downtown above the post office, where we learned and were formed to have a heart towards the city, the self-giving love toward others. Eunoia, the gathering space on grounds where we begin to share meals as a family. We deepened our love for the arts. We move here to Venable. We move out of Eunoia because we were running out of space for kids. So Venable becomes a space to really tend to our children. Brendan describes it as a move into adolescence for us as a church. Then the pandemic hits. So we move into a disembodied space, Zoom. A space to gather and to stay connected through what was for many an incredibly dark season of isolation. We move then into Waldorf. I miss Waldorf sometimes. I don't miss the setup and the teardown. I don't miss loading and unloading either in Brendan's van or our Explorer. The sweat. Preaching in shorts was fun, but that was about the only part of the setup that was. But I think about that there was just in the midst of creation feeling like it was revolting against us to gather in the midst of creation. Do any of y'all remember the hawk that flew through in the middle of our worship service? The baby deer and the mom that just come. I think, Brendan, you were even up front. You were like, can we just stop and watch? I missed that. There was a move back to Venable. The slow regathering, a lot of new faces, mine included. The last time many of you had been in here, we had a different senior pastor. And then what will be a move to 830 Monticello. A new space, but it's a new space for us to, in many ways, return. Space for the city, space to gather for meals, to hang up artwork. God, I'm so tired of our artwork just being in our office, being in closets, to hang it up, to host concerts and shows. Space to gather, to stay connected. And listen, y'all, there is not much that's going to be highfalutin. You didn't think you'd hear that this morning, did you? We're keeping it intentionally simple and earthy, and I really think in many ways Waldorf shaped us in that way. Spoiler alert, we may not do slides. My life's full of enough screens. A slow regathering, a new people, a new space, a space for us to move deeper into becoming ourselves, a space for us to move deeper into becoming genuinely loving with a self-giving, cruciform love, a space for us to move deeper into becoming surrendered to God. I think that's the second reason we cannot rush and hurry through this moment. But the third and final, and this will be a little bit shorter, that I think we cannot rush and hurry through this moment is because God wishes to be seen. You know how much I love Julian of Norwich. That line in her Divine Showings, for it is God's will that we believe that we see God continually, though it seems to us that the sight may be only partial. For God wishes to be seen. God wishes to be sought. God wishes to be expected. And God wishes to be trusted. God wishes to be sought. God wishes to be expected. God wishes to be trusted. I think the seeing of God is a prerequisite to those. The seeing of God is a prerequisite to seeking, to expecting, and to trusting. But, as I alluded to earlier, seeing is different than looking. Another favorite mystic of mine is Thomas Merton. Thomas Merton, in case you didn't know this, was a Trappist monk, wrote a lot, but he was also a really great photographer. And the story of how he became a photographer is one of my favorite. He was interviewed by a newspaper reporter who brought along a camera, and during the course of the interview, Merton just kept looking at the camera. And finally, the reporter was like, hey, do you have a camera? And they're like, no, I don't have any. Like, the monks couldn't have any personal belongings. He goes, do you want my camera? To which Thomas was like, I'm already in enough trouble. He was always pushing the limit. It's one of the reasons why he's my favorite. Just a mystic who just pushed the limits and very honest about it. He goes, no, I can't. And the journalist goes, okay, well, what if we do this? What if I just let you borrow it for a really long time? So that's how Thomas got into photography. But it was one day when he was out with a young monk. And they were walking through the forest, and Thomas was allowing him to take pictures. And as Thomas tells it, the monk is just walking around going, click, 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 click. Like, hand your kid, if you have a kid, hand your kid your phone at some random event, and you will just get pictures you didn't even think needed to be taken. You're like, okay, weird photo. I was just taking photos, and Thomas from the other side of the forest goes, hey, quit looking and start seeing. In that, I hear a gentle invitation from Holy Spirit to looking. It feels so willful. You have to force it. But to see is to receive. To see requires curiosity. And I know I'm messing with words and making distinctions. It's fine. Talk to me after. That's okay. But I do think, I mean, can you hear? Maybe I'll just ask you, can you hear it? Can you do? Look, see. Do you hear the difference? And sure is my inflection. I know. Look and see. Do you hear it? Yeah, somebody? Yeah, okay. See, feel is there's a gentleness to it. There's a receptivity to it. It sounds a lot like the psalm we prayed this morning. I wait for the Lord. My soul waits for God. My soul waits for the Lord more than the watchman for the morning, more than the watchman for the morning. So one of the reasons in the final, and I'll close with this, that we want, and I think it's so important for us not to rush and hurry our way through this, is because I think it's going to be important for us to see what God has done and to name it. God is a God who, when God sees something beautiful, says it. We are great at the other side because we think about judgment. The better way, I think, to understand it is divine criticism. God has something to say to our lives. Some of us have a PhD in the criticism piece, myself included. I'm learning more and more that the other part of who God is God sees something beautiful and names it. Names it as good, names it as right, names it as true. I wait for the Lord, my soul waits for God. To see what God is doing and name it. And to begin to expect and trust that God will do it. So I'm going to end this way. And again, it's not weird, it's just different. And by a show of hands, how many of you are familiar with the song Come Thou Fount? That's enough of you, so this is going to be good. Last year, I was introduced to a song called Come Away from Rush and Hurry by Josh Bales. It's the title of his album. And he takes the tune of Come Thou Fount and puts new lyrics on top of it. And it's beautiful. It's one of my favorite songs. And so I am going to invite us to sing it. No music, just me. So giddy up. But we're going to sing it because it feels like a good way to respond.
The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.